boat to Malik Ashtar, where there are some guidances within it for those that are in leadership positions. And we are currently discussing about the criteria for choosing people into the workforce or into the executive body or the cabinet who are in important and essential and sensitive positions. And we said one of those criteria is that you choose people from good households and people that have a longer precedence in Islam and they are earlier in their accepting of Islam. And Imam Ali alayhi salam gives reasons behind it. One of the reasons he says is that وَصَحُّ أَعْرَاضًا, that these people are purer, they are more correct in terms of those issues that need protection, those sensitive issues that need protection.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, we say that those sensitive issues that need protection include the family, the women in the family, include a person's beliefs, although this is not specifically used sometimes. It's sometimes referred to as metaphorically when you talk about irud, especially. Irud, as we said, is the singular of a'rad, which means that thing that is close to you that needs protection, that you wish to protect from foreign influence. And also, it also means that a person is more correct in terms of a'rad, or is more, you can say, careful in terms of a'rad, in terms of those issues that need protection. It also means that this person himself is careful about other people's private or sensitive issues that they would like to protect. That means he himself is careful about not looking at those people who Islam does not allow to look. He doesn't form relationships in a negative way with others, with other people, and does not transgress or trespass the shari limits, the limits in the sharia with regards to other people, women, their children, and those close to other people. You see? This is a person like that. And therefore, such a person's family is good, is pure, is chaste, and he maintains the boundaries of chastity with others also. Now, these are the types of people that we need in leadership positions. And we are more confident that these people will deliver and they will not be misguided by some, you know, insinuations and that will derail them from the track of goodness. And you know, when a person is careful about other people's privacy, other people's shari'at boundaries in terms of sharia, then Allah naturally protects his family also. You know, we have a story from Shaheed Murunsi. I don't know if you've heard about him, but he's a very famous martyr, a very great martyr in the Iran-Iraq war. He says that he used to go a lot to help in the war, and his house broke down once and the wall had broken down, and because of that everyone could see inside the house. But Shaheed Murunsi knew, and his wife even and the people around say that no one even dared to look inside that house. Why was it? He comes back and he says that the reason is because till now I have never dared to look at another person's family privacy, or I have never transgressed or trespassed the limits of sharia in terms of looking at other people's women or their privacy. You see, this is the type of lifestyle that leads a person to truly be effective in the society.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, here Imam Ali alayhi salam says, these individuals that have gone through an Islamic tarbiyah in their homes, an Islamic training in their houses, their households are pure, and they have been more preceding in terms of their Islam and their acceptance of Islam, they have this character in them because Islam promotes this. Islam is diametrically opposite to the liberal culture today. The liberal culture says that open the doors, let a man and woman, and let all these boundaries be torn, and then you see the result today. I mean, anyone with a little bit of sense in their minds, when he will look or she will look at the craziness of what the West has entered in terms of relationships today, will laugh. I mean, they've turned themselves into a laughing stock. If you ask any person who has lived in Africa, let's say, in the villages, and lived a very good life, a pure life of goodness, and you tell them to look at what's happening in the West, he'll say, this is a zoo. Like, how can you have individuals that have these types of relationships? I mean, they've derailed the meaning of gender completely. Like, you don't have gender now. I was shocked at certain forms that we have to fill where there is no gender. What type of madness is this? This, you know why this happens? It's because you let the boundaries open in the start. You are not careful about men and women relationships. Then it entered into other dimensions because the shahwa and the desire, the carnal desire of a man and a human being has no limits. It has no limits at all. So when it doesn't have limits, it can go to any and every limit possible and imaginable by the mind. And because this is there in the human nature, then you can see the result today. That anyone would, with a little bit of sound intellect will tell you that this is a problem. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we are able to choose the right people into the leadership, especially people that are chaste and pure in terms of their understanding of what we call a'raad, or those things that need special attention and protection and privacy, so that the societies become pure and fruitful. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
Hello, I'm Fatema Masumi, and this is Simorgh, a special edition dedicated to the 42nd Fajr International Film Festival, a festival that stands out because of the number of animations that were screened.
This year, four feature-length animation movies entered the competition. Sheep Hero by Hossein Safar Zadegan won the Crystal Seymour. A very recent recognition as the Best Animation category was officially added to the award list of the Fudge International Film Festival only 6 years ago, in 2019. And that year, in the 37th edition of the festival, the first ever Crystal Seymour was awarded to a feature-length animation movie, The Last Fiction by Ashkan Rahgozar, receiving the honor. And this was all thanks to 8 movies that were submitted to the Secretariat of the festival 4 years earlier, drawing attention to this new form of artistic expression, gaining a foothold in the industry, with the one called The Return by Mohammad Amin Hamedani gaining recognition. All this can be traced back to the first animation that entered the festival, Jamshid and Khorshid by Alireza Yaghmaiyan, an animation movie that made history in 2005 when it appeared on the shortlist of the movies of the festival.
You may be thinking that the Fudge Film Festival is exclusive to filmmakers, critics, and journalists, but no, public screenings are available for ordinary people who line up to watch the movies.
Fudge International Film Festival is famous for its public screenings, and during the second week of this major cultural event, 56 movie theaters in different provinces across the country also hosted the Fudge Film Festival, with people lining up, and according to schedule, the films of the festival were screened, drawing cinema enthusiasts to the movie theaters for a full week. And that is why the Fudge International Film Festival, Iran's most prestigious cinematic event, is often referred to as a national celebration of the art of cinema.
Ghazali Cinema Town is the biggest cinema set in Iran, where the most iconic historical movies have been filmed. Could you think of a better place for foreign filmmakers to visit? Well, the guests of the Fudge Film Festival did exactly that.
Spending half a day in Iran's biggest and most prominent movie set turned out to be a unique experience for the foreign guests of the Fudge International Film Festival.
My name is Nihal and I've come here from Pakistan. It's my first time in Iran. I'm really honored to be participating in Fudge Film Festival. I could never have thought that I'll be able to visit Iran if it were not for this festival. I'm really happy to have visited the media town where there are film studios. I'm amazed to know that around 100 or more than 100 feature films are made in Iran every year. This has really inspired me to watch Iranian films. Many years ago when I was little, I watched Children of Heaven, in which there were child actors. I really liked that film. And in Pakistan, it's very difficult for us to watch Iranian films. We don't know much about these films, but we know that Iranian culture is rich with ideas, philosophy, and literature. So I'd like to go home and watch more Iranian films on YouTube. I was here to explore how I can link young filmmakers in Pakistan with opportunities in Iran, maybe do some co-production and discuss some possibilities about exchanging content. A lot of young filmmakers in Pakistan are struggling to have their work marketed in other countries. I was really happy to have visited all the stalls in the film market and explore some possibilities for connecting young filmmakers between the two countries.
Thank you. located on the outskirts of the Iranian capital, Tehran, with an area of about 115,000 square meters, Ghazali Cinema Town, as it is commonly referred to, was built over four decades ago. Back then, the movie set was designed for the filming of the epic historical drama TV series directed by Ali Hotami called Hezar Dastan, one of the most important and most influential works of art in the history of Iran's broadcasting.
I'm from Bangladesh. I'm a festival director of the Dhaka International Film Festival. This is my 30 years. I'm coming to this festival. First, I've been here in 1994, and this is 2024. It's 30 years. It's my 17th time. I've been many times in Iran, and many films I have screened in my festival. And also, I'm very happy that I know many types of filmmaker and actor, actress from Iran who has visited our festival. And we have a very good partnership with the Iranian films and our audience. Our audience definitely like the Iranian films. Without Iranian films, we cannot have the festival. So this is the one of the major things, I mean, what we have Iranian segment. This year we had a master class. Majid Majidi was in Dhaka and he had a master class in Dhaka. It was very successful, and I'm really looking forward in future we'll do more better. I'm a jury of the Eastern Vista, the Asian section jury. We have 11 films. We have still filmed need to watch, then finally we can say. We are watching, and we have a very good numbers of films is there. So inshallah, we'll come decided very soon. I mean, which one is the best and which one is got the award. And overall, I'm sure pretty good collection selection is there. So many international delegates is there. So it's very nice, good, everything is okay, perfect. This Film City I've been at least four times before in my life. First in 1994 I was there. First time. Later I visited three times at least.
So what is your impression of this?
Well, it's beautiful. Like I can't think about it. And Bangladesh, we cannot think about it. But definitely it's like a role model. If my government give me a support, if they want me, then I will bring them here, come and see these things and try to build in our country.
Throughout the years, the locations that have been replicated here include iconic cities of the pre-Islamic and post-Islamic era. But probably the most favorite part is Tehran during the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Before, during, and after World War II. This part of the movie set has been used numerous times for the filming of big-budget movies and TV series.
My name is Caroline Marconi, and I am from Zimbabwe in Africa.
And how many times have you come to Iran or the Fajr Film Festival?
Well, I've been here before. I've stayed here for like close to 10 years because my father used to work here. Mm-hmm. But now I've come for the first time attending the Fajr Film Festival, and it feels great.
So what is your position in attending the festival? Like, were you a jury or guest?
I'm a guest at the festival for now.
And how did you see the movies?
I think the movies are so good. The selection was really, really good. And there's a big variety of genres and like themes and all that. So I've really enjoyed my time here.
Did you just watch the international section or the Iranian movies?
No, also the Iranian movies. Uh-huh. I love those ones as well.
Okay, can you like name one or two from the Iranian or the international section?
Okay. This is the whole thing. There's one about a tree. I think it was some series of a tree or something like that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really good. And then the one from Bangladesh as well was really good, but I forgot what
Bangladesh
it's called.
Bangladesh was, I think...
Something about it.
Yes,
yeah, exactly,
too.
Exactly. But it was a very good film. I've actually met
Mr.
one of
Adai
the...
Mr. Adai Zamzam was the director.
Exactly, so good. It was such a good film. I loved it. And then from the Iranian ones, I can't really say the words anymore, but like really good films as usual. Love them.
Good. And also, how did you find the experience here? Like, we've started touring first, but it's the Ghazali cinema town. So what do you say about it?
I think it's very good. It is such a very, very big place. I didn't think it would be that big. I think because it's different from my country, I'm quite impressed. We've just seen one of the workshops where they work on the attires and the costume designing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was amazing. They have like, it's a whole business going on here, an entire industry. It's so impressive. I love it.
In the workshops here, everything set and costume designers might need is made from scratch. And currently, another big budget production is keeping everyone busy. A 60-episode TV series depicting the life of Salman al-Farsi, a Persian religious scholar and one of the companions of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him.
My name is Yulia. I represent Russia here. This is my first time in Iran and first time at the Farsi Film Festival. I'm so excited to be here. I'm having a great experience meeting Iranian producers, Iranian filmmakers, and I see a lot of potential for our countries to collaborate. So we are spending this time getting to know each other, finding ways for building stronger relationships. So I hope that after this film festival and this wonderful film market, which I very much appreciate for having me, that we're going to have a very strong collaboration for the next upcoming years.
A través de los vídeos que han mostrado.
Based on the information we got from the videos, I understand that many films and television series have been made here. So I conclude that there are many possibilities to make different films. The fact that you see all this in a country that is not considered Western makes it even more impressive. I think there is a lot of potential, and I am hopeful about the future cooperation, you know?
I'm so impressed of what I see here. I think there are a lot of possibilities for coming and filming here at the studio and just at the Tehran itself. And I'm sure that outside of Tehran there are multiple amazing places that I would love to explore.
I am very impressed by what I see here. There's a lot happening. Judging what I have seen so far, I am sure that great movies and television series have been filmed here. I'm excited to find out what projects are underway.
Currently owned by Iran's national television, IRIB, Ghazali Cinema Town offers great opportunities for joint movie projects, and therefore the foreign participants of the Fajr International Film Festival, who are all one way or another involved in the film industry, were eager to know how this could be possible. IRIB representatives were present to provide them with all the necessary details.
I used to come here to see the Iranian movies all, because I am also connected in the film selector of the Kolkata International Film Festival, Kolkata Children Film Festival. I've come to select some of the latest Iranian movies and also 2023 movies. Because this year in our Calcutta Film Festival, this is one of the largest film festival with a award money of 51 lakhs. We have received 15 Iranian films for the competition, and I saw all of the names, and we selected three or four films Iranian. Then cinema, one of the best film, I cinema for their storytelling, everything. It's like the Indian movies, not the commercial one, not the Bollywood one, but the other type of movies. Since I am from Calcutta, Bengali, so Calcutta and Bengali movies are similar to Iranian movies. Like storytelling, their sorrows, their loves, and everything, family affairs, everything is same. Iranian animation, I must like, and I selected this year also in our children festival, there are 15 Iranian movies, they are children films. Out of feature films, there are 8 feature films, and there are more than 10 shorts and documentary in children movies and with the animation also.
Now, the moment of truth. In the closing ceremony, we'll find out which movies will be taking home the top prize.
The awards of the international section of the 42nd Fanch Film Festival were awarded almost as expected. Well, as we can see and you are aware, films from different countries were screened in the festival this year, and as expected, in the interfaith section, an honorary diploma was awarded to Iranian cinematographer Mr. Mahmoud Kalari for the movie Summertime. Summertime is a very poetic film that depicts and narrates the life of a family in Iran after the Second World War in the 40s and 50s. The very familiar perspective that Mahmoud Kalari himself has when describing his own past and childhood memories. The next film that received the main interfaith award is the movie Love, Passion, directed by Mr. Dariush Yari. Love, Passion presents an attractive and different narrative of Ashura and the Battle of Karbala to its audience. Mr. Yari was able to impress the jury and many movie critics. In the special section dedicated to Palestine in this year's festival, the section dubbed Palestine, Spirit and Soul, we had a lineup of very good movies. Most of the awards in this section were given to Iranian films. Only two of the awards were given to foreign films. The lineup in this section mostly included movies about war and its ramifications. The movie that received an honorary diploma was a film called Flight 175. From Iran. A very poetic story set during the 8-year Iran-Iraq war that we refer to as the Holy Defense. This movie narrates a very interesting love story. It's about a boy who finds a ring inside the belly of a fish. Later, we find out that this ring belonged to a volunteer soldier that fought in the 8-year war between Iran and Iraq. The jury awarded the main prize of this section to Khairullah Taghianipour, the Iranian cinematographer who entered the festival this year with his movie, The Heart of Raqqa. The film narrates a very exciting story about the presence of Iran's secret service members and intelligence forces and how they were able to infiltrate the Daesh terrorist group during the time they controlled the Syrian city of Raqqa. The film reveals the very positive impact that Iran's intelligence forces had in the fight against Daesh. The top secret operations of these forces are recounted in a romantic love story, and therefore it was very well received and made a huge impact. In the East and Vista section, the jury decided that the best acting award should go to the movie Fatima. The Bangladeshi actor of this film was very much appreciated by the jury. In another section, the best screenplay was awarded to the film Zahir from Iran. The film is very poetic. It tells the story of a soldier named Zahir who builds a strong bond with an elderly couple. He develops an interesting relationship with an old man and his wife who live near the barracks where he is doing his military service. In my opinion, this year the jury was quite fair in choosing the winners. Having watched all of the movies in the festival, I personally agree with all of their choices. Now moving on to the best director. The award in this category was given to another film from Iran, The Western Sky, a very exciting and impactful movie about the life of one of Iran's holy defense national heroes named Shahid Shirudi. The movie was very well received. The special prize of the jury in this section was awarded to a film from Kazakhstan. And finally, the best film in the East and West section was awarded to a movie from Mongolia. In the final part of the Fajr International Film Festival, namely in the section dubbed Cinema Salvation, we awarded the Best Director Award to the Spanish movie called Upon Arrival. Well, we know that Spanish cinema is considered a very rich cinema. It has a very good reputation in the world, and it has introduced many outstanding directors to world cinema as well. For example, we have the famous Luis Buñuel from Spain, and we also know some of the new cinematographers of Spain, such as Pedro Almodovar, who is one of the most important cinematographers in the world today. He has created a great dynamic in Spain, which we can even see in the field of TV series production. During this year, he has a lot to say. Regarding the International Festival Award, in the main competition section of Cinema Salvation, the special prize of the jury was awarded to an Iranian film again. Once again, the movie made by Mr. Mahmoud Kalari, the well-known Iranian cinematographer, Summertime. Finally, the Best Movie Award of the Cinema Salvation section was given to a movie from Bulgarian cinema. Bulgarian cinema has really reached a very good dynamic and growth during these past few years. Giving an award to a film from this country shows that the Fajr International Film Festival has the stability that it should, and it has become a base for lesser-known films. In fact, the Fajr Festival introduces some very good films to its audience every year, while also communicating some exclusive ideas with them.
And that brings us to the end of our show, Seymour, our special coverage of the 42nd Fajr International Film Festival. Goodbye.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The Limelight.
In the U.S., former President Donald Trump has endorsed Michael Whatley, chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party, for Republican National Committee chair, and his own daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, for co-chair. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump announced a slate of endorsements to lead the Republican National Committee on Monday night, 12th of February, in a move that will shake up current leadership of the Republican Party. Trump said he's backing Michael Whatley, chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party, to lead the Republican National Committee as its chairman, and his own daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, to serve as co-chair. This would be Lara Trump's first leadership position within the party. Trump also announced he asked one of his campaign's senior advisers, Chris LaCivita, to move over to the Republican National Committee to assume the role of chief operating officer. This group of three highly talented, battle-tested and smart, Trump wrote in a statement on Monday night, they have my complete and total endorsement to lead the Republican National Committee. The shakeup comes amid low fundraising numbers and party underperformance in recent national elections under the leadership of Ronna McDaniel, the RNC's current chair. McDaniel has been in charge of the Republican National Committee since 2017, and she just won a fourth term as chair in January. In 2023, the Republican National Committee had its worst fundraising year in a decade, and it entered 2024 with just $8 million in its coffers, its lowest cash on hand since 2014, according to FEC reports. Ronna McDaniel met with Donald Trump last week at his home in Mar-a-Lago, where sources told CBS News that McDaniel assured Trump she's a team player and will do what's in the best interest of the Republican Party, including stepping down as chairwoman. After the meeting, Trump announced he would make a decision about the future of the Republican National Committee leadership after the South Carolina primary on 24th of February. The New York Times first reported the news that Trump considered tapping Michael Whatley to lead the Republican National Committee. Whatley echoed Trump's unproven claims of fraud in the wake of the 2020 presidential election, claiming in a North Carolina radio interview that "we do know there was massive fraud that took place." Michael Whatley currently serves at the Republican National Committee as the group's general counsel, working on election integrity efforts. Lara Trump, who is married to Donald Trump's second son, Eric, was featured prominently on the campaign trail for Trump before the Iowa caucus and was floated as a North Carolina Senate candidate for the 2022 midterm elections. Chris LaCivita is a longtime Republican operative who has worked on a number of state and federal campaigns, including Rand Paul's 2016 presidential run. He worked as a senior strategist at the pro-Trump super PAC Make America Great Again, before moving to Trump's re-election campaign in 2022. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. Former President Trump on Monday backed Michael Whatley, the head of the North Carolina GOP, to serve as the next chair of the Republican National Committee and threw his support behind his daughter-in-law Lara Trump to serve as co-chair. The Republican National Committee must be a good partner in the presidential election. It must do the work we expect from the National Party and do it flawlessly, Trump said in a statement. That means helping to ensure fair and transparent elections across the country, getting out the vote everywhere, even in parts of the country where it won't be easy, and working with my campaign as a Republican presumptive nominee for president to win this election and make America great again. The former president's preferred candidates, if elected by Republican National Committee members, would cement a full takeover of the committee by Donald Trump. Trump said he was endorsing Michael Whatley as the next Republican National Committee chair to replace Ronna McDaniel, who is expected to step down from the job after the South Carolina primary on 24th of February. Trump praised Michael Whatley for being committed to election integrity. Whatley has been a vocal supporter of Trump's false claims that the 2020 election was fraudulent. In addition to Michael Whatley, the former president said he was supporting Lara Trump as RNC's co-chair. He praised her as extremely talented communicator who is dedicated to all that MAGA stands for. Lara Trump is married to Donald Trump's son, Eric. Trump also said he had asked his senior campaign advisor, Chris Lacivita, to effectively serve as RNC's chief operating officer to oversee day-to-day operations as the general election cycle kicks into gear. This group of three is highly talented, battle-tested, and smart. They have my complete and total endorsement to lead the Republican National Committee. Every penny will be used properly, new day. Ronna McDaniel has been the Republican National Committee chair since Donald Trump arrived in the White House in 2017. She has been re-elected to the position every 2 years since, including in 2023, despite facing multiple challenges, frustrated with the party's underwhelming midterm performances and its finances. Donald Trump declined to explicitly back Ronna McDaniel or a challenger during the 2023 leadership race, and there have been simmering tensions between the two during the 2024 primary as Trump has pushed for the party to rally to his side.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Hezbollah's Islamic Resistance Movement has announced that it conducted a new batch of operations. With the count over 1,000, the hits recently include the targeting and destruction of espionage and technical devices in the radar post, which is situated in the occupied Lebanese Shabaab farms. We can see the occupied Lebanese Shabaab farms, where all military Israeli posts have been targeted and its hardware destroyed. Just beneath that, we can see the town of Al-Khiyam, which is subject to almost daily Israeli shelling. The resistance also declared it has used the heavy Falak 1 rocket to target the Ma'ali Golan barracks, while also targeting the Kila post in the occupied Golan Heights, in retaliation for Israel's aggressions in Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria. Several secret headquarters, including the 91st Division in the Galilee region, and gatherings of soldiers were also under Hezbollah's fire. Experts believe the confrontation is moving in an ascending ladder of events.
The Israelis are attempting to put pressure on the resistance by changing the rules of engagement, and therefore have begun with targeted assassinations. The resistance is responding in accordance with its vision of this battle, and is ensuring that it remains limited to the border region where it has the upper hand.
Journalists and cameramen are always on high alert in case sounds of explosions are heard to get some glimpse of a battle which seems unpredictable. Yet as Israelis go further, so will the resistance. Sheikh Jihad Asadi is a resident of the southern town of Shabaab, but was forced to live further away from his town, which has been partially occupied by the Israelis since after the 1967 war. He says he keeps an eye on the Shabaab farms to watch resistance rockets hit their targets and believes it will one day be liberated.
Netanyahu says he will withdraw from Shabaab farms if Hezbollah withdraws to the north of the Litani River. We tell him that it is he who has to withdraw from occupied Lebanese land. This is the beginning of the end of the Israeli regime, and we advise all the Zionist settlers not to remain on our land, even if a truce is in place.
Hezbollah has also targeted several Israeli drones and lately hacked and confiscated an Israeli Skylark drone. With the scope of Israeli attacks amplifying, Hezbollah is flexibly adhering to the needs of the battlefield, whether in the quality or the quantity of their hits against Israeli targets or the armaments used. Maryam Saleh from Khiyam, South Lebanon.
An emergency protest outside the UK Prime Minister's office
to try and stop an imminent massacre, called for by the Palestine Solidarity Campaign and a coalition of other similar organizations.
Week after week, pro-Palestinian protesters have come out in huge numbers to demand that the British government call for a permanent, immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and to terminate its military and political support for apartheid Israel. And they're galvanized by the knowledge and hope that the pressure they're ramping up on the British government will eventually stir action.
In a sign of that pressure working, only hours before the protests, the UK's Foreign Secretary David Cameron joined other European leaders to caution the Netanyahu regime to think twice about its mass incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah, which shelters 1.4 million displaced Palestinians.
We are very concerned about the situation and we want Israel to stop and think very seriously before it takes any further action. But above all, what we want is an immediate pause in the fighting, and we want that pause to lead to a ceasefire, a sustainable ceasefire, without a return to further fighting.
Hands off Gaza!
Hands off Gaza!
Hands off Gaza!
But while that may seem like a change in the UK government's tone, the protesters here say it doesn't go far enough.
What kind of disturbed and dystopian world are we in? We're asking for peace is become slander. I just do not understand. I cannot comprehend what more needs to be done. Do they need to see 1 million Gazans being exterminated on their TVs or drowning in the Mediterranean Sea? Because that is the options that Israel is giving them.
Another demand here, an end to UK arms sales to Israel. According to the Campaign Against the Arms Trade, between 2015 and 2022, the UK licensed more than $500 million worth of weapons to Tel Aviv. Saeed Pourreza, London.
It's a day off for Zayed, a computer science student in New Delhi, hailing from neighboring Uttar Pradesh state. He wants to pursue a career in New Delhi, saying finding job is like a battle in this part of the world. But he is disappointed with the fact that elections are due and nothing more is important for politicians rather than stoking religious sentiments.
The governments have their own agendas to stay in power and they want to win over and over again. So the easy tool is to exploit people on the issue of faith. India's people from all faiths and the politicians want us to stay uneducated. So we won't question them on their policies. We should be talking about education, unemployment, healthcare, and good future for our next generation.
After the opening of a major Hindu temple in the town of Ayodhya last month, anti-Muslim sentiments are running high in India. In the Himalayan state of Uttarakhand, the demolition of a decades-old mosque and its seminary has led to deadly clashes. The violence is the latest incident of communal flare-up ahead of general elections. Muslim sites have become a new target of the right-wing Hindu groups. In recent weeks, top Muslim leaders urged the government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi to end the religious dispute, citing a threat to communal harmony and calling for the protection of Muslim places of worship.
Since the BJP rule started in 2014, they are doing everything to destroy the country's secular credential. They are taking the country in the wrong direction by promoting Hindu first agenda to patronize the majority. But this country has a constitution which we trust and believe in. They raised a mosque in New Delhi last week, now in Haldwani, calling them illegal encroachment despite the fact they are decades old. They are selectively targeting a particular community, which is very unfortunate.
Experts say the demolitions are not confined to any particular region or state, but a deliberate attempt to demonize the Muslim community. Meanwhile, tensions have gripped the neighboring state of Uttar Pradesh, Bareilly city, after the arrest of an Islamic cleric who had called for protests against the demolition of the mosque. Human rights groups have called on the Indian government to halt this bulldozer campaign. Critics accuse the Modi's government of failing to address growing incidents of violence and hate campaigns against the Muslim community. They allege the ruling party is stigmatizing its critics and adopting policies that legitimize violence against the religious minorities. The BJP denies the claims, saying equal rights for all is enshrined in Indian democracy.
General elections in India are due in May 2024. Observers say many polarizing issues, including those related to Muslims, are being hyped in both social and political domain to garner public attention in the Hindu-majority India, where religion is used for electoral gains. Rights groups have accused the ruling BJP of selectively targeting Muslims, their homes, places of worship and businesses, calling it a larger political agenda. Munawazaman, New Delhi.
The Iranian embassy in Yemen organized an event to mark the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution of 1979. Senior Yemeni officials attended the ceremony to congratulate Iranian diplomats on the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution.
Look to the Islamic Revolution from a strategic point of view. It's the first revolution that spread regionally and internationally to promote Islam as a concept, as a religion, and at the same time to give some strength to the people of this region. If not for the Republic, Islamic Republic of Iran, you won't see that we have a very high and loud voice all over the world.
The Islamic Revolution in Iran was positive and prompted the wide sector of the nation to take action in the great civilizational battle between Islam and infidelity. Therefore, it is considered an inspiring revolution for many Muslim and non-Muslim nations.
Yemeni officials highlighted how the Islamic Revolution served as a source of inspiration for their people, leading them to reject American interventionist policies, a sense that culminated in the 2014 revolution in Yemen.
The Islamic Revolution was inspiring to many Arab peoples, but the regimes oppressed the peoples and frustrated them with the support of the United States. However, the Islamic Revolution endured for 45 years and achieved many of the aspirations of the people of Iran. Today, Iran has become a major regional power that is feared by all countries.
In recent years, Yemeni-Iranian relations have flourished, particularly amid the U.S.-backed war on Yemen. This war, sparked by the 2014 revolution, aimed to reinstate a former regime aligned with the U.S. in the country. Observers say that victories of the resistance movements across the region are the result of the rise of the Islamic Revolution. They believe that without the Islamic Revolution, the Palestinian resistance would not have been able to withstand the brutal Israeli war with such strength. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The 45th anniversary of Iran's Islamic Revolution is commemorated in the Iranian embassy in Kabul. The event was attended by officials from Afghanistan's Taliban administration and foreign diplomats from several countries. During the ceremony, Afghanistan's deputy foreign minister congratulated the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution to Iran's special representative and emphasized his country's willingness to broaden ties with Iran.
We must emphasize that the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan wants to broaden ties with neighboring countries, especially the Islamic Republic of Iran. We are committed to deepen our relations with Iran in political, cultural, security, and economic fields. Once again, we congratulate this anniversary and wish to see mutual relations expanding between the two nations.
One of the aspects of the effectiveness of Islamic Revolution in Iran lies within our foreign policy. In this regard, our government have made numerous efforts to expand relations with other countries. Accordingly, one of our main concerns has always been to establish peace in Afghanistan. Islamic Republic of Iran, following the emphasis of its leader, has on its agenda to help the people of Afghanistan and strengthen good neighborliness, dialogue, and communication with the Afghanistan's authorities.
People in many countries were inspired by the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And of course, the Afghans were affected the most in 1979. The Islamic Revolution in Iran was a series of events that led to the overthrow of the Pahlavi dynasty in 1979. The revolution largely affected many Muslim nations around the globe as it marked a significant shift in the political dynamics of the West Asia. It is believed that Iran's Islamic Revolution in 1979 marked a pivotal moment in its history with far-reaching impacts. The revolution played a key role in shaping the geopolitical landscape of West Asia and continues to do so. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
After a visit to Lebanon, Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdullahian arrived in Damascus, where he met President Bashar al-Assad and discussed bilateral relations. President Assad warned that the U.S. supply of weapons to Israel threatens to expand the war in Gaza. Amir Abdullahian said the aggression against Gaza is considered the main issue at the regional and international levels, noting that Syria is in the front line of supporting the Palestinian people and their cause. Amir Abdullahian also met with his counterpart, Faisal Miqdad. They condemned the U.S. aggression on Syria, Iraq and Yemen, and the repeated Israeli attacks on Syria. They later held a press conference.
I discussed with President al-Assad the latest regional and international developments. The leaders of our two countries are willing to achieve remarkable progress through cooperation in various fields. President Ibrahim Raisi has extended an official invitation to President Assad to visit Iran. We condemn the illegal presence of U.S. forces in Syrian territory.
Our two countries share identical views concerning the support that should be given to the people in the Gaza Strip in light of the genocide perpetrated by the Israeli occupation. Syria has fought wars against the Israeli occupation and remains prepared to engage when necessary. But we decide the timing and approach. The repeated assaults by the Zionist entity on Syrian territories are a direct result of Syrian resistance against this entity.
The Iranian minister concluded by stating that the onslaught on Gaza must come to an end. This visit comes at a critical time to reaffirm the unity of the axis of resistance leadership in response to the escalating aggression by the U.S. and Israel, and to demonstrate the absolute support for the Palestinian people in Gaza. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
The National Day reception in the center of Moscow carried out by the Iranian embassy marked the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. The reception was attended by top Russian dignitaries as well as military figures and members of the civil society.
The anniversary of Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution is commemorated in Russia every year. As the two countries continue to expand ties, Russian political elite pay their respect to Iran.
Deputy Foreign Minister and Special Representatives of the Russian President for the Middle East and African Countries, Mikhail Bogdanov, pointed out on the confidential dialogue between the two countries.
We very much appreciate coordination in the Astana format, where we, together with Iran and Turkey, are the guarantors of, in fact, the cessation of hostilities and the civil war in Syria. Of course, we conduct constant consultations on the other issues on the Middle East agenda. Now the Palestinian problem came to the forefront.
According to Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak, Russia values warm and friendly relations with Iran and hopes for a consistent increase in trade turnover and the expansion of economic cooperation. Of particular importance is the development of the international north-south transport corridor, as well as the speedy completion of the preparation of an agreement on a comprehensive strategic partnership.
Our countries have enormous potential that is inexhaustible. These include energy, transport, trade, agriculture, geological exploration and construction. Trade, turnover and joint investment projects have significantly increased. The Russian-Iranian Business Council is active and we have almost completely switched to settlements in national currencies. This allows our countries not to depend on those who are trying to hinder the development of our economies. And our Iranian friends also joined the SCO and BRICS.
The guests of the reception all believed in one thing. The stability of Iran's Islamic revolution is due to the unquestioning support of people. Iranians are defending their revolution despite constant propaganda as well as huge funds to overthrow its results.
It is a very important day because Iran strong stand with Palestinian everywhere. For sure you know what happened now in Palestine, in Gaza especially, with Israeli attack, and we highly appreciate the position of Iran, who is standing with Palestinian people, with Palestinian struggle, with Palestinian rights, and we continue to do that. We hope that the Iranian revolution make a big change in the area, and we are building on this change, and we hope that, not hope, we